Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. This podcast is hosted by Laura Amin, a voracious reader of romance and young adult novels. In this podcast, Laura interviews fellow readers and authors and asks them for book recommendations of what we should read next. We hope you enjoy it.
Hi, Karen. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I'm a very young woman. You can't really see me. So I'm tall, blonde and thin. I have three cats, all of whom wishes that they were in a single cat household, and I write books.
So how does it work with having multiple cats? Did you introduce them like one at a time, or what was the whole process of introducing the cats?
Well, the first two, they replaced, well, not replaced, you can never replace, right? Yeah. But they came after cats who had died.
Okay.
And one we found in a bucket in a barn. And she's really, she's just an angry young woman. And the other one we rescued from a cattery. So she's beautiful, but she's incredibly spoiled. I mean, there's like a social experiment going on in our house. And then the other one is this boy cat who just showed up one day and was like, I expect dinner at 4. And I like my tummy rubbed. So, you know, and they all hate each other. So it's wonderful. It's fantastic.
I love this. Yeah. I'm thinking I was a cat mom and my cat passed away last year after 16 years. So I'm thinking, there's like something that's happening. And so I'm like thinking this time to get a new cat, get a new companion. You know, I work from home. I might as well have someone just to hang out with, you know. And so I'm like, do I get one? Do I get two? What does it look like?
I've always wanted sisters or a sister and brother.
Yeah.
You know, because I want to look at them rolling all over each other and loving each other. But my friend got two sisters and they hate each other. Cat's gonna cat. That's the thing. But if you get two, at least one's going to love you.
Yeah, that's true. That's like the log. You know, I was lucky enough that my cat loved me, even though she had times where she was like annoyed of me. But for the most part, she did love me and she did spend time with me. But it was a hit or miss. It's a hit or miss with cat. So,
yeah, that's why I love them. You got to prove yourself every day.
You do. And you got to feed them and you got to take care of them. But same time, give them their space. Like,
yeah, no appreciation.
No.
Yeah, it's completely thankless.
It is a thankless job. So thank you for bearing with me with some cat lady. So let's see. So when it started to start writing, like, were you a reader beforehand, or like writing was like something you always wanted to do? And then
I always wrote, but I think it's different between just writing and then writing something that can be published. Mm-hmm. So I've never really called myself an author until I had a book published. That was just my mental thing in my head. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's such a big reward to be called an author. But when I was 6 years old, I was writing little books about my sisters being murdered and bludgeoned and they would be kidnapped, but they weren't very suspenseful because no one cared. You know, I was just like an only child. So I know you're going to make parallels to my cats, what I said about my cats, but this was like the truth. I should have been in an only child household. But those were my books that I wrote. So I was writing these murder stories and my dad would give me a quarter every time I wrote one because he thought they were hilarious. So I was incentivized from a very early age to be a writer. And so I just kept writing. And then as I got older, I realized there's such a thing as being like, you know, the books, the names on the books are actual human beings. Most of the books that I read were by men. So I didn't think women could really write stories. And eventually, you know, I discovered Flannery O'Connor and I was like, hey, you assholes who've been telling me all my life that women can't be good writers and you can't make a career of it. You know, she's a weird lady who came from a small Southern town and people are still studying her works, even mm-hmm. though she passed away. So, hey, I think I can do this. And that's when I really got into being a writer for a profession, which, you know, looking back, like how stupid was I? Because no one can really make a living as a writer, right? I know I'm really lucky that I can do that, but it just was something I thought was always going to happen. And, you know, from a very early age, I wrote. And I think also if you're a writer, you don't choose to write, writing chooses you. So I feel really kind of honored to have that, though it is a curse at times.
Yeah. And so since a young age, you were writing murder books, you know? So, but, you know, what, when you think about that, like, and think about like the little seed and then creating a brand of some sort of books, like, you know, page turners, suspenseful, murder, kidnap, lawyers, like all those different things, like, you know, did you ever imagine that this was going to be a brand, or did you think of something else like when you started writing, you know?
Well, you know, the first book I got my agent with was historical fiction. It had a murder in it, though. Okay. And nobody wanted to publish it. And I said to my agent, can I see the rejection letters? And I think she was really afraid I would write all of them and tell them to go fuck themselves. But so she like redacted their names and their addresses. Not very well, I could still see them. So I'm sorry, all those people I said, go fuck yourself. But the letters were really nice. And they said, we like her writing style. We like her voice. We don't like this story. And so my agent said, what do you want to do next? Which is a great thing for an agent to say to you, right? Because it means they haven't given up. And I said, I've always wanted to write a crime novel because I love the thriller genre. I'm not sure if I can do it, but it's what I love reading. You know, I'm like from a very young age, I was reading age inappropriate books about murder and that sort of thing. A lot of Anne Rule. And so I started writing what became Blindsided, my first published novel, and I wrote the bones of it in 18 days because that's how much time I had that I could take off from work. And so, you know, it's like, if you have 18 days, it's going to take 18 days. And I just really found my voice and I loved writing about these crimes that I normally read about from a man's perspective and putting a woman's perspective. Cause you know, a lot of tough guys at those times, if they had a woman who was sexually assaulted, their response was, okay, well, the way to heal her is the hero makes love to her, right? Or if women were in these stories, they were there to be saved or screwed, or usually both. And I wanted to do something different. And that's what I was set out to do with Blindsided. It's what I set out to do with all my books. I want everything, every new book to be different from the previous one.
And you have a unique voice that has captured such a big attention because it's like unique enough and there's crime, but there's page turners and they're, you know, I know a lot of parents, a lot of fans, like they're super fans. Like it's not even like, it's like they read one book. They're like, no, we binge it all, you know? So you have created a brand that's like a unique voice. Like your voice has sparked, you know, other people to come and buy the book, you know, and devour and be super fans and talk about it, you know?
Well, I do love that because I know how I feel. I'm super fans of certain writers. Mm-hmm. Some of them I met and I was like, ah, I can't be your fan anymore. That's always my fear is someone's going to meet me and they're going to be like, nope, don't like your books anymore. But, you know, I love that. And I always think about those readers when I start a book. You know, as much as I love all my readers, I don't really think about them when I'm writing because it has to be what I'm doing for me. But I, you know, before I start it and after I finish, I think about when I was a college student and I dropped out, just being full disclosure here, which if you're going to do that, write a book. But I remember how much time and money it took for me to buy a new book from my favorite author. You know, time, like, because I was making minimum wage and time working and away from my life, and then to sit down and read it. If they phoned it in, I was so pissed off. I took it personally. And so I know that everybody doesn't love every single one of my books. I mean, they should, but you know, some don't. But I'm really conscious of the fact that I never want them to say she just phoned it in, right? They might say I like the other ones better than this one, but they're never going to say, ah, she just did it for a paycheck.
So let's talk about your latest release, False Witness. Tell us the elevator pitch and what should we expect without giving spoilers.
Yeah, I'm really bad at elevator pitches. Like when people say, what's it about? I'll say it's about 500 pages, which, yeah. You know, honestly, given the times we're living in, that should be enough because, you know, what's better than a big, juicy book? But it's about two sisters, mm-hmm. Lee and Callie, who experience a horrific trauma when they're children, and we catch up with them 20 plus years later, and we see where they are in their lives. And this trauma comes back to haunt them because it's a thriller. And that's what usually happens in life also, but mostly you read about the more horrific things in thrillers, which is the part I love. But it's a book that also takes place during the pandemic. It's not about the pandemic, but I kind of just wanted to capture how insane our lives are. And it really helped in a lot of ways to have the pandemic incorporated into this just plot wise. So, you know, it's like a kind of roller coaster read. And it's a lot about trauma and how early childhood trauma can really affect us as adults and change the course of our lives.
So Chad, because you mentioned the pandemic, so, and you incorporated the pandemic. So what was the process of incorporating the pandemic without going to the, you know, even though you're going through the pandemic, like, it's like, was it an escape for you? Like incorporating, or was it not an escape? And just basically just a reminder. And then the whole
girl, it was just anxiety left and right. Well, you know, cause everything kept changing. Yeah. And like people need to understand what the word novel means. It's not just a book. It means new. Yes. So, you know, we were learning as we went along. It reminded me a lot about, you know, when as I was in high school, when the AIDS crisis hit, or junior high, and, you know, you didn't know anything. It's like, you know, should kissing or touching someone's hand. And, you know, now we know a lot about HIV and AIDS, just like we know a lot about the coronavirus and COVID-19. But so when I was writing it in real time, I had to keep adjusting everything just to accommodate. And, you know, I kind of had to predict things that would happen too. And especially when the vaccines were announced, I mean, I was halfway finished with the book and the vaccines come out. I was like, I got to go back and put vaccines in. And, you know, fortunately, one of my favorite books that I took in college, I took an English course in college, and they taught Pale Horse, Pale Rider, which is a short novel in a greater collection by Katherine Ann Porter, who was also called Callie when she was a child. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing, you know, reading about it in textbooks in high school. You know, it was like a paragraph, and then the rest was, we're the greatest nation in the world. But just not really understanding what a pandemic was until I read Pale Horse, Pale Rider, because Katherine Ann Porter experienced this herself. She had the Spanish flu. Her body temp got so high, it turned her hair white. And she was a young woman when this happened. And she had all kinds of lingering health effects, but the visceral experience of being in the pandemic was captured by her in a way that only fiction really can tell you the story. And so I wanted to do that in my book and, you know, catch some crazy things. Like when people cough, you know, the way you look at them or used to look at them. Now, thank God for the vaccine.
You still look at them. You don't know, because it can be anti-vaxxers.
I know, right? Yeah, exactly. Or the fact that in Atlanta, at least, the distillery started making hand sanitizer, so everybody smelled like tequila. And, you know, just all those little things that we might forget about, I wanted to capture. But it was hard. It was really hard. And it was a difficult choice to make. And I talked to a lot of writer friends of mine who are like, no, I write escapism, or no, it's too awful. And Mike Connolly told me he was going to put it, and he was working on a Lincoln Lawyer that came out in the middle of the pandemic. And he like pulled it back so he could incorporate the early stages of the pandemic into the book, because, you know, we started seeing it in prisons and jails in such a horrific way. Mm-hmm. It was almost as bad as nursing homes. So, you know, I thought, well, if Mike's going to do it, I think I'm clear on this. And his comes out first. So if it's really just bash, then I can pull back from it.
Well, you're the first author that has included the pandemic that I've interviewed, and I've interviewed about 100 authors this past year. So it's like, it's a quite a few, and there a lot of the consensus is we want to write for escape. We don't want to talk about it. We're not sure. It was tough enough writing about during the pandemic, let alone write about the pandemic, like it's too much anxiety. And so I'm glad you were able to give us like a diary of, you know, of reminders of the things, because you forget, like we, right. We're in that phase where we're like emerging from the cocoon, you know, and it's like you forget like the trauma and the expectations and the toilet paper and
yeah.
You know, like,
well, that's the point, you know, because I talk about Callie and Lee experiencing this horrific trauma. We've got entire generations who are going through a very traumatic period right now. Well, we know from studies about childhood trauma that if you experience it early on, you're as an adult more susceptible to diabetes, heart disease, depression. You're more predisposed to alcohol and drug abuse. I mean, there are all kinds of things that trauma holds on to in the body. And, you know, I thought, well, this is a great parallel to talk about what, you know, what we're going through as far as trauma and tie that into what they're going through. Cause who knows what's going to happen 20 years from now. If you're looking for a career change, psychiatry, you know, inventing drugs to help people with depression, that kind of, those are going to be, unfortunately, growth industries.
Yes, it is. Oh, well, Thank you for giving us a diary of a reminder of what was our time of 2020, which was something that we may never forget.
Yeah, that shit was crazy.
It was. I have to tell you, I spent the whole year, I moved to a new place 2 weeks before the pandemic. So yeah. I moved out of state. I left my house and just basically spent a whole year indoors in a big apartment by myself. So it's quite an experience to realize like, oh, life is very different from.
Yeah. Well, are you very introverted? Because I am. And I thought it would be easy, but it wasn't.
It wasn't. I am an ambivert. Like I'm an extrovert at some points, but I do need my time off. And so what I ended up doing was I ended up overbooking myself and did a bunch of author interviews. Mm-hmm. Because publishers were like, there's no events, let's put them on a podcast. And so I had a bunch of them. And so I was just like constantly like having these meetups with new people, even though I have not seen, like, I only talk to the Starbucks barista. Like those are the only people that I see in my real life that I'm like, oh, let me go grab my Starbucks. You know, but Starbucks was closed for a couple months. So it was like, there were months where I was like, I didn't talk to anyone. I didn't know anyone, you know? But it still was tough. Like, I think there's a part, it's like I think there's an expectation that, I don't know, there's like expectation that you should have master a hobby or write the book or do the thing.
I lost like, you know, lost weight or exercise and I was, I did the same thing. And I was like, well, what about potato chips? I'll just sit in here and eat those.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's just like, well, no, we're going through trauma.
Yeah, exactly. Lean into it.
Lean into the trauma, lean into the anxiety. Like, we're unsure what's going to happen. Stock up on toilet paper and see how you survive, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, anybody who got through it, I mean, people have had horrific losses. It took the AIDS pandemic in America 10 years mm-hmm. or what? No, I'm sorry, 20 years to get to 600,000. We did that with COVID in a year and a half. So like, anything you did to get through it short of murdering someone, way to go. Well done. That's what I think. We should all get a pass.
We should all get a pass. Yes. Yeah. All right. So let's chat about some book recommendations. Do you have any book recommendations that you can share with us?
Yes. You know, I got several here because my buddies got galleys out. Lisa Unger is one of my favorite. She's got this Last Girl Ghosted is her new one. I don't know when it's coming out, but I just finished it. It's fantastic. And Kate White sent me one. I can't remember. It's a Bailey book. I love it. Have you interviewed Cecilia Ahern? She's an Irish gal.
No, but she's
delightful.
I'll
wonderful.
I'll reach out to her people.
Yeah. So I love this short story collection, Roar. She did P.S. I Love You.
Yes.
If you know that, She is so sweet. She likes my books, and she's always so complimentary and happy. I'm a little worried that she might be planning to kill me. Like it's like a deep fake. But I also have like this nonfiction that I just finished, How the Word Is Passed by Clint Smith. And it's fantastic. It's just about the language of our places and things and how they're embedded in slavery times. And, you know, like Angola prison was a plantation and we still call it that. So it was just, especially being in the South, like knowing these places, but not what the names signify. It was really shocking. But of course, it's not just the South, because guess what? Racism is everywhere. Yeah. Spoiler alert. It happens in the North, in the West, in the East as well.
It's a subtle racist, but it's the racist.
Like, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, when I was in New York many years ago, there's a grouping of statues that commemorate these people who were lost to lynching during the height of the Civil War. A lot of New Yorkers were so angry about the cost of the war that they rounded up some Black people and lynched them just out of anger and horribleness. So we don't realize those things are not just all around us, but they're in our psyche.
Yeah. Well, these are great recommendations. So tell us where you can find you online.
You can find me at KarenSlaughter.com, on Facebook, Twitter. I'm not doing TikTok. I just can't. Instagram, all the fun sites where all the cool kids are. And if you want to see my cats and many other cats, though, Facebook's the place for that.
I love this. I'll be going to Facebook looking at your cats.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you, Karen, for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. The What You Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.